We've all got one. It might be open, it might be closed, it might be boggled, it might be blown. It's possible to lose it, bend it, expand it. Governments might seek to control it. People take drugs to relax it. The mind, your mind. You can be out of it. People can mess with it, play games with it, write songs about it. You were always on my mind. It's a lone star state of mind. Make your mind up, ABBA. Mind games forever, John Lennon. We've all got one. But do any of us really know what it is, how it works? Where is it located? How is it connected to us? Who controls it? What part of me is it? Is the mind the same as the brain? What part does intelligence play in shaping who we are? And what part does the brain play in shaping our intelligence? We are in deep waters. Something so everyday, without which we are nothing. More of that later. And yet something so abstract, diffuse, intangible. What is the connection between mind and will? Who or what makes the considered decisions, the often crucial decisions in our life? How is our thinking connected to our emotions, affected by our mood? And what is the sequence of mood, decision, action, which, when it is disturbed, can lead to devastating outcomes? How vulnerable are we to the effect of mind-altering medication that can send our composure and our peace of mind crashing? And if we are so vulnerable to medical factors, who are we really? Have we outgrown the tendencies of the past to locate the activities of the mind, the business of falling in love, the acts of great courage, the capacities for betrayal? Not in the cold, aloof logic of the brain, but in the heart. And what is the relationship between the mind and the spirit? The mind and the uniqueness of personality and individuality. Is there a ghost in the machine, the essential spiritual element that can survive the destruction of the physical machinery? Or is there some kind of mutual dependency there? In the words of the great late Johnny Nash, there are more questions than answers. Demanding questions that unsettle and challenge and take us into the mystery. So, no small talk here on a Wednesday lunchtime. And when it comes to knowing God, discovering God, what is the contribution of the mind and what are the limits of the mind? Jesus says to Peter, "Flesh and blood have not revealed this to you. You didn't work this out by yourself." It's a question the Bible raises when it asks the question, can man by reasoning find out God? Or does our knowledge of God come to us by some other means, some other avenue? Are faith and reason at loggerheads, or can they live together in harmony? There has always been in the Christian faith enormous respect for the mind, for the power of human reason. Schools of thought and theology considered they could figure out the reality of God through the power of pure reason. They looked to the logic of nature, the creative order, the clear sense of purpose as they saw it in all things. They examined the moral coherence at the core of the ethical experience of humanity and found the absolute moral laws of the lawgiver. And working from philosophical first principles, they deduced the existence of God, the first cause, the one greater than whom there could be no other. And reason was the vital tool for working these things through, the power of the mind to unlock the universal truths about God. And therefore the mind is to be respected, for it points with clarity and consistency to the reality of God. Great minds, brave thoughts, robust thinking. But there is another approach to discovering God, which believes that, wonderful though the power of the mind is, it can only take us so far in understanding the true richness and reality of God. And actually, if we want to know him, we must wait on his self-revealing love, opening the eyes of faith, revealing in his graciousness and kindness his true nature as the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the one who comes in intimate, costly love to redeem and save us. The intimate, risk-taking, personal shepherd God, who is not mere idea or abstract, but loving Father who bends low to hold us to his cheek. You might, through the power of human reason, through the efforts of the mind, stumble upon the theory of God, the abstract of God, the notion of God, something out there, maybe even in some vague sense, someone out there, but you would never, it is argued, discover through the process of reasoning the God of love, the astonishing God who dwells within us by his Spirit. For that understanding, you need the divine initiative. The God who reveals his truth and gives himself, who in his grace takes us beyond logic to faith and revelation, exposes his heart and invites us to embrace truth that mind and intellect find shocking, offensive even to some. Perhaps that's why we might find the Christian insights so convincing, because they are so counterintuitive, so not what logic would do. An incarnate God born in a stable, a crucified Christ. All this requires us to shift our perspective, takes us to a new and very different place. Once it comes to us, we see the beauty of it, the wisdom of it, but we would never think that out. We would never think that way, never work that divine strategy out for ourselves. It's too wild. It's too off the wall. So faith can be immensely reasonable once you have the reality of God's self-giving revelation to work with, to take us beyond where we might go ourselves. Our mind and our critical reasoning powers are vital, precious gifts. But we recognise the limits and we accept them. We stand amazed by the insights we are given in the gospel. And we use our mind to unpack them, to celebrate them, to protect them, and to proclaim them. We unpack them through study and theology, through preaching and reflection. We celebrate them through worship that gathers up these truths in prayers and songs and poetry. We protect them through robust defence against fake religion. And we proclaim them through sensitive evangelism. In all of this, our mind at work, weighing up, considering, explaining, discussing, translating. And all of these activities of the church engage the mind and are enriched by ideas and creativity, dialogue, intellectual rigour. As we listen with the heart. We soften our wills to receive his will, but we remain critically aware. Our thinking faculties sharpened, alert to logical inconsistencies, arguments that don't hold water, preaching that is big on assertion and thin on argument, devoid of poetry, bereft of originality, adrift from the scriptures. We rightly demand, when we sit in church, listening to the preaching, that our reasoning powers be respected, please. We are people with minds of our own, not gullible dupes, prepared to accept any old tripe just because it's said with enough gravitas and holiness of voice. We listen. We think. We never stop thinking. We weigh things up. And who is this we that's being spoken of? And how is it all connected up? Mind, body and spirit. What happens to the mind and the spirit when the body is racked and ravaged? What happens to the body when the mind is disordered, delinquent or damaged? What harm is done to the health and wholeness of personality when the spirit is crushed, undernourished or ignored? There seems to be a trinity of interdependence within the human being, mutual dependency for good health in each part upon the good health of the other parts, a unity of need and belonging, a common shared benefit enjoyed by each component part, each element in the rich cocktail of our humanity. Body, mind and spirit locked together in a completeness, so that if one part suffers, the whole is diminished. And where each is respected, celebrated and cherished, the possibility of real humanity is enjoyed. When the body is being treated with care, when the mind is being stimulated and stretched, and where the spirit is being allowed to soar, there is humanity. We are profoundly physical beings with faces, voices, mannerisms that heighten and define our unique individuality. We have minds with which we can reason, assess, measure, evaluate, and bring creativity to life. We have spirits with which we can seek God's truth, know his touch, feel the breath of his spirit, comfort us and commune with us, challenge, inspire, and call us to service and sacrifice. We are wonderfully made, complex, rich in possibility, children of God, made in his image. That's who we are.